Hello, this is Janet Michael. In addition to hosting The Valley Today each weekday at noon on the River 95.3, I also produce podcasts, and I'm excited to introduce you to a new podcast series in partnership with Lord Fairfax Community College. Having provided higher education and career training for the past half century, LFCC is tightly interwoven into the fabric of the Northern Shenandoah Valley and Piedmont regions. Join me every week for conversations with current and former students to hear their funny and inspiring stories as we learn about their journey to higher education, the role that LFCC has played, where they are now, and where they plan to go. We'll also talk to current and former professors about their experiences and best memories of LFCC over the past 50 years. Get every single episode as they're released on our website at theriver953.com under the podcast tab, or you can subscribe for free in Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, on Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for LFCC Stories. Hello and welcome to The Valley Today. I am your host, Janet Michael. Happy Wednesday as you are listening to the show today. We, however, have pre-recorded our conversation on the Zoom screen and we are doing a little bit of double duty today. It is a radio show, of course, as you are listening to it every weekday, but on the side, it's also going to be a podcast, which is great because my guest has a lot of really cool things to tell us. On the Zoom screen with me today is John Hua. He is the president and CEO of Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. John, thank you so much for taking some time to meet me on the Zoom screen today.
Thank you, Janet. Really glad to be here and really looking forward to chatting about the co-op and just informing your listeners of all that we've got going on at REC these days.
Well, I know that the bio that Brian sent over to me says that you have a 25-year electric utility sector experience. You've been with Rappahannock Electric for 3 years, but coming in as CEO in the middle of a pandemic, nobody can train you for that, can they?
Well, you know, you're right. Definitely some challenging times out there. I have been in the industry over 25 years working with public power utilities, the first half of my career with municipal utilities, and then the second half with electric co-ops. And I served as a CEO of cooperatives in both Florida and Texas. And I worked at the National Trade Association that works with the 900 electric cooperatives across the United States. So I've been at REC just about going closer to 4 years now. We have an outstanding organization. I was really thankful just to join REC and to become part of such a wonderful team. And this past August, I became the president and CEO. And you're right, it was during a difficult time, but I would just say that our industry is getting very challenging as we add new programs, as we have new technologies, as the expectations on our employees and our grid grow. Really, we are in a very dynamic time now in the energy sector. It's a fascinating and exciting time, but there's also always plenty of challenges for us to work on at the co-op. And just one of the great things about being an electric co-op is that we work really closely with the other co-ops here in the Commonwealth and really throughout the nation, our trade associations. And so it's a very, very collaborative environment. Not only is a co-op really a collaborative environment in terms of consumers, but the co-op itself, from business to business, we do a lot of co-op to co-op work, sharing of ideas and best practices. And that's really, I think, one of the greatest things about our model.
So give me an idea, paint a picture for me for our listeners about Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. I am a member owner. I live in Middletown in Frederick County, so I get my power from REC. Kind of give me a little bit rundown of the stats, how much land do you cover, all that sort of stuff.
So if we could, let's start just quickly at the national level. So there are about 900 electric co-ops in the United States, and co-ops cover over 56% of the land mass.
Wow.
Most people don't realize that. Co-ops provide service in 88% of all U.S. counties, at least some portion of those counties. So co-ops are everywhere, so to speak, except for maybe the more urban sectors. REC today, we serve portions of 22 beautiful Virginia counties. We're very fortunate with the service territory. We have, you know, four interstate corridors that run through our service territory, which is, I think, a unique attribute and kind of speaks a little bit to the growth of our region over the years. We have 17,000 miles of line, over 17,000 miles, that are 430 employees always work to maintain and to keep that energized and operate it in a safe and reliable fashion. So the co-op is growing. Even this past year with the coronavirus impact, we weren't quite sure what would happen to co-op growth numbers, but we've continued to see a positive uptick in the new homes and businesses in our region. So we're seeing that type of growth. And then, as I mentioned before, we're seeing growth in terms of the offering of new services and really new expectations that our members are expecting from the co-op and kind of placing on us. So, you know, with that, we have four local offices that we operate out of, and that gives us a really nice footing to be highly responsive to all the counties and all the membership that we serve. And I think, again, with the co-op, it's just important to know that our employees are folks that live in the community, and they have a vested interest in the co-op itself and the reliability and the upkeep and the maintenance of our systems, and really just how we move forward with REC's values, you know, at the forefront of all that we do.
And I know employees are a big deal. This morning, I mentioned at the top of the show, this is a radio show and part of a podcast. This morning, I recorded a podcast episode with Felicia Ainsa, and she was talking about when she came on board to REC, all of the employees, she said, I couldn't find a single employee that told me that they didn't like working here.
Right,
and
right.
I said, me either. I've talked to dozens and dozens of them over the last couple of years. It's a really great place to work.
It is. And we've got so much to be thankful for with, you know really all of the, even our retirees and the folks that have built the co-op over the years, the board of directors and our whole team really just leans in. Our values, we lead with caring, respect, integrity, and service. Caring is a great value to put into an organization's pursuits and into what it stands for. That has been very, very meaningful over the last many years, but especially in a global health crisis that we've all encountered. But, you know, our entire team is really just so aligned in what we do. We have a very wholesome calling as an electric co-op and providing a very, very essential service to the region. Our board of directors is fantastic and really helps support and grow the culture of the co-op. And, you know, as we've added new employees, we really make sure that we're, seeking the right individuals with the right character and the right talents and those that understand what it means to serve at a co-op. And honestly, everyone has their day-to-day roles, but we're an organization that is, always on, or it's our goal to be always on. There are disruptions sometimes on the grid, but when those events do occur, so many of our employees actually take on a different role. They may have to take on an emergency response role or reaching out to keep the community informed, keep our members informed, or to inform local officials. So there's so many different things that we kind of transform into in the case of a major weather event, like we've had a few this past winter for sure.
And not even just when there's a major weather event. A lot of your employees are involved in local nonprofits where they live. They do outreach. They do fundraising.
Absolutely. It's really just in the spirit of REC's employees. There's just kind of this natural drive to be involved, to be engaged. We see it every day in our organization. It could be for individuals that are serving on local boards and committees or helping with volunteering, to our people stopping on along the side of the road to help somebody out. And we see that and experience that literally daily in our organization. And it is truly fantastic to be part of this organization and for us to be able to surround ourselves with folks that truly want to serve.
We talked earlier about you coming in and taking over as CEO in the middle of the pandemic, and you were mentioning all of the different ways that you guys had to pivot. It was probably a little bit more complicated for somebody the size of REC to make a pivot in a pandemic than it may have been for a mom and pop store on a main street somewhere.
Sure. You know, and first of all, you know, we just, really understand the gravity of all that's been placed on those around us, our membership and the public out there. It's been an unbelievably difficult time for so many families and businesses. And with that has come a lot of need to make adjustments and changes. And like many of those other organizations, we had to do the same. I couldn't be more proud of our team at all levels for the really timely and wise response to making sure that we're continuing to keep safety and health at the forefront. As you would imagine, with the line of work that we're in, we're always keenly focused on safety and health, whether that's from our line workers and our field personnel that are dealing with energized system in some of the most adverse conditions, or the heavy trucks and equipment that they're dealing with if they're not really working on the energized system as well, or sometimes they're dealing with all those variables along the side of the road all at the same time. But beyond that, we're always looking out to make sure that the services we offer are safe for the membership and the general public. So with the pandemic going back, a year ago now, we had to make some pretty rapid decisions. Our team was incredibly flexible, and our team, our culture, while our culture is really built around being together, we've operated very differently this past year, and that culture though has continued to be very, very strong in our organization. I think we're all anxious and excited about a time when we can safely resume with some normalcy. But for now, everyone has done just a wonderful job, and their families have been supported too. We asked our employees to operate different shifts, to switch days they were going to work. Many began working from home. Others had to work in very unique circumstances. So we asked a lot of our employees, and all across the organization, we saw our team literally just step up and make it happen. And I will also say that some of the systems that the co-op has put in over the last couple of years really benefited. One of those is just some of the expansion of our billing and payment systems. Those were, as we had to close our lobbies and transition, we were able to lean more heavily on some of those systems we put in over the last few years that are really convenient and are highly available and have worked really well for us. So all the way around, REC has done very well. I will say with that, most of our office employees continue to operate predominantly remotely, and our field employees have been operating in a more sense of independence. We still have field crews, and they're still working as a crew, and there are times when our teams have to be shoulder to shoulder, especially in these storms, but all of our team has done a great job of minimizing the interactions where we could, like at our warehouses and with the flow of materials and those types of things. At the organizational level, we've done a lot to work with the membership. We continue to waive disconnections for non-payment. There are no penalties or late fees. All that's been waived. We did a significant, really double our normal capital credit retirement last summer. We're getting close to the time when our board will start to consider something along those lines again. In addition to that, we were thankful that the governor's budget had CARES Act dollars that have allowed us to take about $0.8 million and put that back in the hands of our membership in terms of reducing their bad debt or their debt on their power bills. So we've been able to kind of work closely with our membership over the last several months to make those CARES Act dollars available to them to help reduce their arrearages.
And that's the one thing that I will say has stood out to me throughout this process is the fact that even after it wasn't a mandatory act in a governor's order, REC continued to say, look, we're not going to disconnect you. They legally, I guess, in some ways you could have, but that was just never an option. You were always going to work with your member owners.
So there are some options there. There is a moratorium in effect, but there are some options there for co-ops. But beyond that, our philosophy has been to take care of our member owners. That caring culture was there before, during, and it will be there after the pandemic. And that's what we believe in. And so we've worked with our members to try to establish long-term payment plans, the types of things that can help them just get reestablished financially and get their business. This is going again as we hopefully, are emerging out of a pandemic era in the months ahead, and just work with our membership to set up longer term, very flexible arrangements that seek to find what their budget can handle and make it something that is affordable for them into the future.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, can we get in the weeds a little bit and talk about what you're doing to keep the power on? Because I know there's a lot of technology and a lot of cool new stuff coming our way.
There's quite a bit. Yeah. And there's a lot we can get into there. So looking forward to that discussion. Certainly.
Fantastic. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation, pre-recorded, of course, on the Zoom screen with John Hua. He is the president and CEO at Rappahannock Electric Cooperative.
Got a financial decision to make or a goal to reach, but you don't know where to start? You've come to the right place. Introducing Quick Money Chats with the Northern Shenandoah Valley Financial Education Program. Visit tinyurl.com/quickmoneychat to schedule a virtual chat with a staff member or trained volunteer. We won't tell you what to do, but we will give you the tools you need to choose wisely. And because Virginia Cooperative Extension is part of Virginia Tech and Virginia State, your land-grant universities, you can be sure that our information is credible and trustworthy. And you'll know that we aren't trying to sell you something. Maybe you want to improve your credit score or reduce your banking overdraft fees, or even figure out if you can afford to buy that car. Sorting through tons of information on the internet can be overwhelming, and sometimes it can be hard to know who to trust. Schedule a quick money chat and get the information you need to take action. Go to tinyurl.com/quickmoneychat and get financial education personalized for you.
Welcome back to the Valley Today. I am your host, Janet Michael. Happy Wednesday. As you are listening to the show today, we, of course, have pre-recorded our conversation on the Zoom screen. We are doing double duty today, podcast/radio show with John Hua. He is the president and CEO at Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. And again, if you haven't heard any of those podcasts, they are fantastic. I cannot begin to tell you how much I have learned. Just go to theriver953.com/WeAreREC, and you will see dozens and dozens of them there. So, John, in the first segment, we talked a little bit about REC as a whole, how you guys have managed to come through the pandemic. But let's talk about REC actually. I mean, your job is to keep the power on, and that's not as easy as I think sometimes a lot of us would like to think it is.
That's right. I mentioned over 17,000 miles of power lines that we maintain and operate, and that, you know, the rights of ways and everything else that's associated with that. And you know, on the best day of the year, the most mild, calm day of the year, the work that our team does, and I'm speaking of our field team, particularly at this moment, the work that our line workers do out in the field, even under the best of circumstances, can be very hazardous. As we go through a period like we've been through with these winter months, you realize that we're calling out our team members for multiple days at a time. In the worst of circumstances, it's muddy, it's icy, it's cold, it's windy, it's dark, there's trees falling. We have energized and de-energized conductors that they have to deal with. And so when you see the yellow trucks rolling in to take care of the grid and to take care of our membership, you know, just be mindful of the complexity and the hazards associated with that and what our team members are doing. But, you know, Our maintenance and upkeep and reinvestment in the distribution and substation systems and what we refer to as the grid is pretty expensive these days. We're spending more year over year now on capital improvement. REC spends about $70 million a year on reinvesting into the grid and into our systems. And so those are kind of at historic levels now, but that's to accommodate growth. Is to accommodate the upkeep and expansion of our systems. It's to make sure we're on top of maintenance and safety. And so we are. We deal with a lot of contractors and a lot of projects, really hundreds of projects, to get that capacity out there each and every year. A couple of things that we do beyond that, we look every year at our kind of our weakest performing circuits, if you will, the electric circuits. And we go in and we really do some special treatments on those circuits in order to make sure that they move up from the lower performing in terms of reliability, that we're getting them moving up and getting them more commensurate with the rest of the territory and the rest of the system. We've recently are concluding and beginning to look at some new standards and related to system hardening. So we've been going through some system hardening studies. We've been doing a lot for system hardening over the years. But in light of many of the storms that we've just dealt with over the last several years, you know, we're taking another look at what more can we do from a preventative measure. If you look back just over really like in the last couple of months here in December and February, both each of those months, we were hit with a pretty significant ice event. And the combination of those two, each one was over 20,000 outages and in totality, over 1,000 outage events. So we had over 40,000 accounts that we had to restore across those two ice storms and over 1,000 events, be it trees on the line or iced conductors or some type of problem with any of our poles or system. So we've been very, very hard at work. Our team has been very, very hard at work over the last several months. We're using a lot of technology as well on the grid. So if you look at our industry today, we have really this phenomenal alignment of very traditional, poles and wires and heavy duty, heavy grade construction. And that's the core of what we do. And in comes technology over the last few years, and it's been more of a technology overlay on top of the grid. So we're really trying to optimize the best of both worlds. Heavy duty, strong heavy duty construction with significant capacity, enough to meet all of the coldest of cold and the hottest of hot days of the year. And with that, we want to add the right technologies to be kind of nimble and respond to problems and isolate problems and keep as much power on as possible safely at any given time.
And I know, aside from all of the other things that Texas had going on when their grid went down, part of what I'm hearing is that they were not looking ahead and weren't thinking about the worst case scenario. And that's part of the reason why they've had such long lasting issues. So the fact that you guys are already looking at that and thinking, okay, we're going to start moving ahead years before we may ever even need it, is kudos to you.
Well, yeah, and thank you. The market there is really just very different in terms of the wholesale energy market. It's kind of a complex discussion, but in our part of the world, there's a capacity, capacity charges and capacity auction in the structured market where we exist in this part of the nation. And that Texas market lacks those capacity features. And so that is a big element of what didn't work well for them in this February, in the very frigid February cold spell that went through. And I think there will be a lot of lessons learned out there. We're fortunate in our part of the world that the capacity planning is done in a different way. And that happens really at two or three different levels. It happens at the market level. It's the market's called PJM. It also happens at the level of our generation and transmission provider, which is Old Dominion Electric Co-op, or ODEC. And ODEC is in Richmond, and they're really providing us what I would call wholesale energy services. And then lastly, Janet, kind of as you were referring to as well, it happens at the distribution level, at the REC level. So we've got enough, have enough capacity for the worst case and events. And that's, there's a lot of science that goes into that, a lot of engineering projections that go into that, but we have to make sure, particularly for the rigid temperatures, that we have enough capacity to get there. One of the things that's gonna be a big challenge for all those levels, at the market level, at the generation transmission level, and at the distribution level, will be some of the new technologies. So today, when we have an outage at a residence, it could be disrupting remote work. It's probably disrupting remote school. It might be disrupting telemedicine. It may be disrupting other forms of connectivity to the world. As the future is occurring with electric vehicles, the next thing we will add to that list, which will be very significant, will be that an outage at a home or business could also then be disrupting transportation to a greater extent than it's ever been before. So we have significant capacity expansion and higher stakes in, even into the future for reliability as we see this really tremendous wave of electric vehicles that is starting to occur and is going to be very, very, both a great opportunity, but also a great challenge over the next decade.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions when you mentioned electric vehicles. I'm sure renewable energy is part of your long-term plan. It almost has to be, I would imagine.
Sure. Yeah. So, right. So there, from a technology perspective, it's really goes back to that blend. We've got the very traditional resources that I would say are more dispatchable, like the traditional natural gas and other facilities that are there under all scenarios. And then with that, we're now putting together with that and merging with that, if you will, the renewable systems. And that's happening both at the utility scale, like with ODEC, with our generation and transmission provider, but it's also happening at the rooftop level with REC members, member owners. And we have over 1,000 member owners today that have rooftop systems of some sorts or some size or another. And what we do is we work very closely with those member owners. We want to interconnect them. We want to help advise them, provide them billing information and consumption information so they can think about the sizing of their system. And then when they're using excess power, we want to buy that back, which we do. We buy that back through net metering, and we redistribute it to their neighbors. When they aren't producing energy, we're there. We have the grid there for all the consumption that they need. So the grid wasn't necessarily originally designed that way, but it works magnificently that way. And so we, as a distribution utility, and also as a co-op where the members own the system, it just makes sense to fully embrace working with and helping collaborate with members and so that they can continue to be a part, not just now of supporting the co-op economically, but our members can actually be a part of supporting the co-op in terms of energy contributions. And that's really, really perfect for the electric co-op model.
And I understand that now even you're exploring the broadband avenue, something that normally somebody wouldn't connect with electricity is internet, but you guys have figured out a way and you're working on that as well.
We sure are. And that's a movement that's happening across the United States, with electric co-ops becoming increasingly involved in kind of closing this rural digital divide. Here in our service territory, we've got a couple of things that are going on. First and foremost, we've been constructing a fiber backbone network. And this isn't to offer a direct retail services, but it's a backbone to connect up over 100 of our locations in most of our counties, and to kind of construct a regional backbone that will help us with the operation of the grid. It will help us with new grid services, but it's also there to help us support eventual broadband rollouts or even point-to-point services that a county or another organization or agency might need. Additionally to that, with that, we just announced last week a partnership in Louisa County. So there's a model really emerging there. We announced a partnership in that portion of our territory, along with the county, Dominion, and then Firefly as the internet service provider, where REC will be leveraging and making available our poles and our rights of ways to help a third party provide broadband access. So we're very much interested in being a facilitator. We want to make sure that we are part of the solution, where the co-op has assets that could be towers, it could be substation sites, it could be poles and wires and rights of ways. Where we have those assets, we want to do everything we can do to make those available for providers to further those services out to our membership.
And we heard so much about that when we went into lockdown and schools closed and so many children didn't have access to the internet because of all the different problems that they may have getting, these companies would have getting internet to them. And I think that even when we're on the other side of this pandemic, some of the stuff is going to stick around. So the fact that you're not just saying, oh, okay, well, that's, it's going to be over and we don't ever have to think about it again. I think it's great that you're still planning to move forward with that, because a lot of this stuff is going to stay.
Yeah, the model for us is really, how can we facilitate and how can we make the co-op's assets available, and also plan for that in the future to make sure that we're putting in infrastructure that's already sized and ready for those attachments, and so that we reduce the delays or expenses into the future as well. So that's a real opportunity for us, and we're excited to announce the new partnership in our service territory, and looking how that might maybe how that could be expanded to other counties as well as talking about talking with other providers that would have an interest in leaning on REC's poles and wires and assets to make this a reality.
Well, and it's always good for them to hear that you're willing, that you're here and you want to work with them. Sometimes people just automatically disqualify themselves or their business. And I think this is a great way to say, hey, give us a call. Let's see what we can figure out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we hope we get many of those calls and we hope we can respond to all those calls.
So we've got to wrap up our conversation for the day. Can you give me the Rappahannock Electric Cooperative website where people can go get more information about all of this stuff that we've talked about today?
Sure, absolutely. So your listeners can go to www.myrec.coop and they can find out more about just about everything that we've talked about. And if I could do kind of one last shout out to your listeners, you know, we have a great organization. One of our challenges is that we have a lot of upcoming retirements. We've already been seeing the waves of retirements. And so I think it's, you know, for folks that are interested in a career in energy, I think we would be a wonderful home. About 20% of our employees are eligible in the next 5 years. So we are going to be really working closely with community partners to make sure that we're recruiting and bringing in the right team members to help keep our co-op very, very strong.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you'll get a ton of people now. Your phone's going to ring off the hook.
Sure thing. We'd love to have those calls. Yes.
Well, we are going to wrap up our conversation today for the Valley. Today, we have been chatting with John Hua. He is the president and CEO at Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. John, thanks again for taking some time to kind of bring me up to speed on everything happening at REC.
Sure, Janet. I really enjoyed it. And thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with us today.
I will be back tomorrow. I will have a brand new episode of The Valley Today ready to go for you a few minutes after noon. We are going to be chatting about Valley Health's health fair going completely virtual, starts next week. So meet me back here then just a few minutes after noon.